15 for Lynn, which is doing a lot of work on quantum channel theory, and he's going to talk about that today, telling us about the Q law of great numbers.
Thank you very much, Tess, for the introduction and also for the invitation.
I forgot to say something. There's a group of us going out for dinner tonight at 6:30, so if anyone else wants to join us, let me know right after the talk so I can get some precise notes.
It's a great pleasure to be here in this beautiful setting, and thank you for the invitation. I'm going to present material which has been mainly worked out by part of our group in Berlin. Tomorrow, Sabine Janssen will focus on another issue also on quantum information theory, namely about how to use about the adiabatic approximation. I won't talk about that today. Today I will talk about, as Beth just mentioned, the quantum version of the law of large numbers and how it is related to quantum information theory. Now, maybe first one word to the motivation. I think most great theorems in mathematics have a quantum version. So is the law of large numbers. It is, for me, no surprise that there is such a version. This is what I wanted to explain to you. I will formulate the version of the Shannon-Macmillan-Riemann theorem, which is in some sense the quantum version of the law of large numbers, the quantum version of the Shannon-Macmillan-Riemann theorem. In generality, we will, however, talk mainly about a special case, just in order to give you the feeling about what is going on, and talk about the version which has been introduced by Schumacher, which is the quantization of the IID case for this for the Shannon-Macmillan theorem. So. In the first part of this talk, I will therefore first give you a review or remind you of the classical Shannon-Macmillan-Riemann theorem, and then I will explain how it is related to the law of large numbers. Again, this is all well known. Then this will be used to make the transition to the quantum version for what is the analog of the IID random process, which is the situation where you have states which are product states. And then we will go into the formulation of the general theorem, which in fact could be also looked upon as a statement in local quantum field theory. We will continue with yet another of the asymptotic statements, which is the quantum version of the Sarnoff theorem. So let me start with the classical statement of the Shannon-Macmillan theorem. Do not think that a European is talking here. One has to behave in a European way and be very silent. This is not necessary. Consider the set 0, 1 with probability p of 0, which I denote by p, and p of 1, which is 1 over minus p. And then we look at the IID process xi. I is a natural number. And they have the Bernoulli distribution, which means that the probability that xi is equal to 0 is small p, and the probability that xi is equal to 1 is 1 minus p. And then we look at the corresponding set omega n, which is a 0, 1, 1 to n, the functions from 1 to n to 0, 1. And as I mentioned before, the probability distributions are IID, so that this is just a product p of xi, I equal 1 to n. This symbol here is an abbreviation for this, for the sequence x1 to xn. So this is the probability of one such sequence, and then we have here the well-known Shannon entropy, h of p being minus sum p of x log p of x, x from the set 0, 1. Now, if we have this situation here, then there holds the following conclusion for all epsilon larger than 0. There exists n epsilon such that for all n larger than n of epsilon, there exists a set Cn, which is part of omega n, such that the following statements are true. First, Pn of Cn, which is just the sum of p of x1, x of n, n in Cn. Oh, no, what did I? Okay, no, I will. The following. Okay, no, I will do the following. Okay. Minus n. So this is a full set. Oops. I will to simplify my notation and unify this, what I have on my paper, I will do the following. I use here not all numbers, but just the natural numbers. This doesn't matter really. So I have here Cn, and this is larger than 1 minus epsilon. And the second statement is
that x1n is
opposite. Thank you. Mm-hmm. So the second statement is that h minus epsilon, I just dropped this p here, is smaller or equal to 1 over n logarithm, the cardinality of Cn, smaller or equal h plus epsilon. And finally, the third piece is that h minus epsilon is smaller or equal to minus 1 over n logarithm p of x1 to n, smaller or equal to h plus epsilon. The first equation means the first equation means that Cn is approximately 2 to the n h. And the second statement means that the probability x1 n is approximately 2 to the minus n h. In other words, you have a set omega n. Inside this set, we have a set Cn. This Cn here is, from the point of view of the probability, a full measure set. A full set has approximately probability 1. This is the first statement. The second statement is that although it has probability 1, it is exponentially small with regard to the set omega n, namely it is 2 to the n entropy. And on this shadowed set, we have an equidistribution on a logarithmic scale. Namely, every point in here has the same entropy, the same probability, given by the 2 to the n entropy. So this is the well-known classical statement of Shannon-McMillan, which can be sharpened, and then it becomes the theorem of Shannon-McMillan-Brieman, which I don't want to go into it at the moment. I might comment at the end. Now, let me remind you how this theorem is related to the law of large numbers. It is, in fact, I would like to claim that just a variant of the law of large numbers. It's not more and not less. And for that, I'll give a short sketch of how this is reduced to the law of large numbers. Connection to the law of large numbers is the following. Let delta be bigger than 0, then we consider the set Cn, which is defined in the following way, x1 to n. And now I take the empirical measure and x of x1 to n divided by n. This here counts the number of symbols x showing up in the sequence 1 x1 to xn. I look how this relates to the probability p of x, and I demand that this is smaller than delta. This is obviously what we expect to be the typical sets, because they have empirically the probability p of x. By the law of large numbers, we know that this set has the following property, that the probability of Cn goes to 1 for n going to infinity. So, and this is in fact everything which is contained in this theorem here. Let me just make one more step. Well, what does that mean? This means in particular for alpha bigger than 0, there exists an n of alpha and delta such that p of Cn is larger than 1 minus alpha, for all n larger or equal than n of alpha and delta. This is nothing but what is written up here. So we have the statement one. Now, what about the statement two and three? For the statement two and three, they just look at the following simple fact. I let x, 1, n be in Cn, and then we look at the probability of such a sequence. This is quite clearly p of 0 times p of 1 to a certain power, and the power is again related to the to how often 0 shows up in the sequence, x1, n, x1, n. Now, if we would have chosen, let me now make a remark before I continue, which relates to very, very classical and old theorems, namely about the binomial distribution. If we look at the following situation, if Cn would be the following sequence, x1, n, and we have now this here is related to the following classical theorem. Pk defined as n over k, p of n minus k times 1 minus pk. This function as a function of k for fixed n. And if n goes to infinity, the question is, where is this function large? Its function looks like that. We have n times p, and then a Gaussian. And what I wanted to point out is that the same arguments which I'm now going to use are well known for this very simple binomial distribution. So okay, that was just a remark. So let me continue now here. This here I can rephrase in the following way. This is 2 to the logarithm of p of 0 times mu 0 of x 1 n times 2 of logarithm p of 1 times mu 1 x 1. And I will rewrite this in the following way by adding and subtracting p of 0. And this is 2 times now I write it like that in order to minus n over minus p of 0 times logarithm p of 0 minus p of 1 logarithm p of 1. And now I correct the mistakes. This is now minus nu n nu 0 of x 1 n divided by n minus p of 0 minus n nu 1 x 1 n divided by n minus p of 1. Now, since I'm in Cn, this here is small here. And we are ending up with just minus n entropy. So since we have a bound on that, we can neglect that and we'll abbreviate that now. And this is approximately 2 to the minus n h up to an error. So this shows how the law of large numbers enters this statement, and that it is in fact really the same thing as so we have an equivalence between the statement of Shannon Macmillan in the classical sense and the law of large numbers. Now, let me come to the formulation of the law of large numbers, or the Shannon Macmillan in the quantum setting. And the formulation I choose is the following. Let psi 1 be a state on the C star algebra of the 2x2 matrices. Now, I choose this formulation because I want, on the one hand, to present a very simple case, but on the other hand, also show that the statement as it is formulated holds for, of course, for general C-star algebras, but as much as the Shannon-Macmillan theorem here is, of course, not only valid for the Bernoulli process, also this theorem here is valid for in a much more general setting. Now, psi 1 is a state. This means that it maps the 2x2 matrices into C. It is positive, maps positive matrices in positive numbers, and it is normalized. In other words, psi of the identity is 1. This is what is meant by a state. This means that psi 1 is the same as a 2x2 density matrix. And if I do that, I can decompose psi 1 in terms of its spectral projectors, which is P of 0 times capital P of 0. This is the spectral projector for the eigenvalue P of 0 of psi of 1, plus P of 1. P of 1 are just the corresponding 2x2 matrices. And we have now the von Neumann entropy, which is minus trace psi 1 log psi 1.
So I guess P0 and P1 are orthogonal.
Yeah, so this is the spectral decomposition of psi 1, which is somehow big word for just Jordan form or their diagonalization or whatever you like. So this Is this all clear or not clear? It's probably more a question of language if something is not understandable, but then to tell me. Now I consider the broader thing that psi being the product state psi 1 n times and this product state is of course a state on C 2 tensor C 2 tensor C 2 the product the tensor product of n times the two matrices. So this can be defined to be this is again a C star algebra. And now we have the following statement. For every epsilon bigger than zero, there exists n epsilon such that for all n bigger than n of epsilon, there exists a projection P n in A n such that psi n of P n is larger than 1 minus epsilon. Second, H S minus epsilon is smaller or equal than 1 over n trace P n, smaller or equal S plus epsilon. And thirdly, the same expression is smaller or equal than minus 1 over n logarithm of psi n of p n prime, smaller or equal to S plus epsilon. And p n prime is a rank 1 projection contained in Pn for all Pn prime contained in Pn, trace of Pn prime is 1. And Pn prime is an orthogonal projection. This statement is true. S minus epsilon is between those two. Is the statement clear?
Pn prime commutes with Pn, right?
Sorry?
So Pn prime commutes with Pn?
Yes, this is always so. If one has an orthogonal projection contained in the in another one, it commutes. Now, let me show you that those two statements are the same if one uses it. The following translation.
two, do you mean the log of trace PN?
Oh, I'm sorry. Very good, thank you.
And this one, in number one, what is psi n of here?
Psi?
In number one.
Here?
No, for the time.
There.
Here?
But yeah, what is psi n?
Oh, it's the space.
Okay. This here is psi n of pn. It's equal to trace. Psi n is a density operator, a density matrix, times the matrix pn, which is a self-adjoint projection pn.
I mean, the first line is just really something like the size of the typical subspace.
Yes, yes.
And then the next line is just a very simple consequence of that, isn't it?
Yes, correct.
Oh,
okay. Yeah, like here.
Okay.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. In fact, I wanted to say that, in fact, the only relevant, really relevant thing here is the law of large numbers, which is at the basis, has those three consequences, which are coming out. Now, x equals 0 is translated into the projection 0, 0, where 0 is the state 1, 0. And x equals 1 translates to 1, 1, and 1 is just 0, 1. And x 1 to n translates into x 1 tensor x 2. Into xn times x1 tensor x2 tensor xn. Is this slightly strange notation acceptable? Okay. So, with other words, every such symbol goes into a projection. So that Cn goes over into a projection Cn, which is nothing but sum over x1n from Cn. Now x1n, x1n, this is now the abbreviation, x1n, and this is x1n. Cn goes over into trace of PCN, and the probability of CN is related to psi N of PN. Now, question. This year, it's the same as this here, except one minor thing. Now, let me ask you, what is the problem? in order to translate left to right and right to left. It's almost just a translation, the right side is almost just a translation of the left, up to one simple.
P and prime?
Yes. So, but what is the problem with P and prime?
There's no one dimensional element.
Not necessarily. As long as it is along the coordinate lines, so to say. As long as the P and prime is of this type here, we are in shape. But it doesn't have to be. Of this type. It doesn't have to be a product state made out of those things here. So there is just a little bit to do, but this is a very minor thing because of the following fact. If we write an arbitrary projection, P and prime, P and prime is say A, then the vector A is a sum A I 1 to A n of I 1 to I n. So P and prime is sum A I 1 to A n modulo square times A 1 to n I 1 to n. Now the sum of this here is 1. The sum of those coefficients is obviously 1 by construction. So the sum A I 1 to A n square is 1 because we have here a projector and A has length 1. Right? This here has length 1. So those states are an orthonormal basis. Therefore, the sum of those objects squared is 1. You don't look very happy there.
No.
Where are all the...
Yeah.
I was going to give one step. You know what I forgot to tell you is that if we look into the C n prime, only the diagonal terms show up. So I will make the computation, and the orthogonal go away.
Because of the trace.
Yes, because you have the trace, and that only the diagonal pieces show up. Okay, let me do it more carefully. So now A is equal to some A I 1 to I n 1 to n. So now I look at C n P n prime, and this is the trace of C n. Now A and now this is sum A I 1 to A A n complex conjugate A J 1 to A J n. And now trace of psi n I 1 to n J1 to N. So, and now you see, due to the trace condition, you get only one sum. So I choose now as a basis for computing the trace, I choose just the JN. Now, what should come out is that it is just a convex combination.
Choose the eigenbasis and then you.
Yes, of psi.
The convex combination of the diagonal and psi.
Right, okay. Oh, I'm sorry. Okay, I should. Okay, very good. Sorry about that. What one has to use is not this basis here, but the basis which is related to P0 and P1. So, therefore, 0 means now eigenvector of psi 1 with eigenvalue P of 0, and 1 means eigenvector of C1 with eigenvalue P of 1, or with other words, 0 is P of 0, 0, and the same with 1. No, and if one uses that, this commutes with psi n, and then it diagonalizes, and then we have for this here just the sum a I 1 to a n modulus square times the projection times c n of I 1 n I 1 n. So, and for this here, I know the inequality. This inequality, because it is just a translation of the classical theorem, because those things here can be considered to be those here are just the translation of the symbol I 1 to n. So for that, I can use the classical theorem. And so by a convex combination of this inequality, using those coefficients here, I get the general case. So in other words, up to this minor part, the classical Shannon-McMillan-Riemann theorem is the same as the quantum Shannon-McMillan in this setting here. And in fact, the real work which is necessary to prove only in the more general case, which is not an IID case, or as it is formulated here, a product state case. The product state case being the analog, a quantum analog of IID, only in the more general setting, real hard work has to be done, and this has been now done first for the special case of completely ergodic states by Pates, and then for ergodic states by the four people I just mentioned before. So now let me now tell you how one formulates the general setting. Are you not? Is there a problem?
For the limitation. When you get the trace psi of the projection on A, then we come to the AI modulus.
Yeah.
Okay.
Because I mean, because we want to turn that the A's are eigenstates of the psi, but
yes.
The eigenvalues, where are the eigenvalues going? To P0 and P1. Yes.
The eigenvalues of what? Of
psi
n.
Yeah.
Okay. I didn't talk about them. One can talk about them, but I didn't.
In that formula, right? So you're taking combinations of the eigenvalues.
Yes.
I think that they're both of they should be there, but then they should.
No,
be there.
No, I don't have to write them. I can write them.
Yeah, but then they should then be in the formula above. You don't just have some of the AI squared. Then they're multiplying their p's.
No, here I have the psi n. Let me come to the definition of the quantum information source. This is a one-dimensional spin chain, Heisenberg chain, constructed in the following way. A is a finite dimensional C star algebra with unity. And then we look at A, M, N, which is A tensor A. And you should think of the following fact. You have here Z, and here I have M, and here I have N. With other words, at each point, just attach a copy of A. So that this is the tensor product, and then I let psi, A infinity is the norm closure of the union of A, M, N, union over M closure, and this needs, of course, some explanation. A, M, N is considered to be embedded into A, M prime, N prime. If M prime and N prime are larger, denoting an interval which is larger than if the interval on the discrete interval is contained in this here, I just make some unities and arrive. And so I can include one of those C star algebras in the other if the order is allows it. Then I have, of course, on all those things a norm, and then I can close it and I get infinity. This is a construction which is very well known from local quantum field theory. And now we consider on A infinity a state, psi, and this state should be translationally invariant in a sense which is very natural, namely on such a C star algebra A infinity, there is a natural shift, and if this psi here is shift invariant, we call it invariant, and then we call it ergodic. And if the following is true, if psi is equal to alpha 1 psi 1 plus alpha 2 psi 2, psi 1 and psi 2 are again translationally invariant states, alpha 1 and alpha 2 are convex, make a convex combination, then one of them has to be 0 and the other one has to be 1. So, in other words, it is not possible to decompose this state into two other states, which are also translationally invariant in a non-trivial way. So in this case, this is psi is ergodic. And such is, this is the situation we are considering. Then for such a situation, we also can define an entropy density by looking at the following thing. Psi can be restricted to such a subalgebra, on such a subalgebra, the psi becomes a density matrix. For this density matrix, we can define the von Neumann entropy. And now we look at the von Neumann entropy per volume, per number, per elements in the set. Consider the limit. This limit always exists due to general properties of the von Neumann entropy, and this gives rise to an entropy density. So, and now, if we have this setting, we can formulate the quantum Shannon theorem. Let A infinity psi and the translation operator be a quantum sort. Psi ergodic. T is this shift operator, which I just described in words. And S, the entropy rate. Then the following holds. For each delta bigger than 0, there exists an of delta such that for all n larger than n of delta, there exists an orthogonal projection n in A n. I think you know what I mean. This is an abbreviation for a tensor product of A with A fact with n factors, such that first psi of n p n is larger or equal than 1 minus delta. Second, for all q, for all p prime n p n, we have c n, which is the restriction of psi to this subalgebra A n, is an element, and I'll write it like this, in 2 to the minus n s plus delta, 2 to the minus n s minus delta, and again 2 to the n s minus delta is smaller or equal to the trace of Pn, smaller or equal to the n as plus delta. So this is totally analogous to the statement of the product situation as described before. And so this is the motivation of this theorem starting from the product and IID situation is quite clear. One word about rule. There is, in differently from the IID case, the product case, one serious problem coming up here, namely the following. In order to prove the theorem, one has to decompose, one has to consider blocks of quantum configuration, so to say. And those one has to and then has to take those blocks large, and in order to have the correlation between, in order to control the correlation between those blocks. And if one looks at large blocks, one can then reduce the case to the IID case. However, if one introduces such blocks, we break the shift invariance. So the state is not anymore ergodic, because the shift which we have at our disposal, if we introduce blocks, is the shift by the length of a block. So this means that we have not the shift t, but we have the shift to a certain power. Now a state which is ergodic with regard to the shift is absolutely not necessarily ergodic with respect to the shift to a certain power. So one has to take this shift to a certain power and this state and decompose this state into ergodic components. And this is a thing which one can be which can be done. However, one has also to prove that in each ergodic component the entropy is the same, because we want to have the same energy. So it can be shown that in each ergodic component, first of all, that one can decompose the state into ergodic components. Secondly, that on each ergodic component the entropy is the same. In fact, this is the main technical problem in the proof of this theorem. So I didn't get it to the sum of the theorem, unfortunately, but time is up, and I thank you for your attention.
So, are there questions? Yes, Frank?
I don't quite understand the definition of ergodic. I mean, usually I think of it as, you know, if I know the past is some process, then I'm probably still going to visit all of the possible states that might come. Maybe possibly could have visited, but I don't quite see how to pull that out.
Yeah, it's not quite obvious. If to go from the definition you have to the definition here, one has to go through certain steps. First, from your definition, one has to go to, which is a classical definition, and you have quantum, but maybe at that point I can also say, you know, all those classical statements are reproduced, of course, if the C star algebras are abelian, then you can, of course, and this is one of the major checks which one can do. Everything has to check to be converted, has to work. So now your definition of ergodicity is more or less the same as saying the only invariant subsets are either the full set or the empty set. Because if you say that you can come from every point to every other point, means that if we talk about matrices, it means that for every I and k, we can find an n, so that this is non-zero. Now, this means that now think that if you accept that your way of understanding ergodicity is the same as saying that there is only the empty set or the full set, an invariant thing, then let's talk about a situation where you have a non-ergodic case. In a non-ergodic case, there are two sets which are invariant, which make up the full space. So let's think we have here a set, and this is the other set which is invariant under this key. So now we restrict our measure to this set and to this set here, and we just make the convex combination of those two things. So, in other words, our state, and the state in the Abelian case is always a measure. It's just the sum of two measures. One measure lives here, and the other one here. So this is the state. Okay.
Other questions? So, thanks, speaker again.